Good morning. Welcome to Inquisition Update. My name's Tom Press, and I'll be your host for the next hour. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're returning from the weekend and wish to return to the book A Woman Rides a Beast by Dave Hunt. Dave is telling us about the slaughter of the Serbs and how the Vatican used Roman Catholic priests and bishops, prelates of the Roman Catholic Church, to lead a band of Ustashi killers to slaughter the Serbs. Now, why would the Vatican want to slaughter the Serbs? Well, because they are of the Orthodox faith, the Eastern sect of Catholicism, which had split from the Roman Catholic Church back in 1054 AD, and were seen as rebels, or seen as, heretics for divorcing themselves from the Roman Catholic Church and separating themselves from the so-called Vicar of Christ, the papacy, the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. Rome's attitude has been with the Orthodox, these Orthodox Christians, they're called, that they are either to return to the Roman Catholic Church, submit themselves completely and totally to the papacy, or be slaughtered, convert or die. And that was the attitude of these Roman Catholic Croatian Ustashi killers. Now, we'll begin with a quote on page 304 in the book, if you're following along. Talking about these Ustashi massacres that even, well, shocked the Nazis for their cruelty. It says the massacres began in earnest at the end of June of 1941 and continued throughout the summer, growing in scope and intensity until August, the terror reached its height. The whole of Bosnia ran with blood. Bands of Ustashi roamed the countryside with knives, bludgeons, and machine guns, slaughtering Serbian men, women, and children, desecrating Serbian churches, murdering Serbian priests, laying waste Serbian villages, torturing, raping, burning, drowning. Killing became a cult, an obsession. The Ustashi competed among themselves on how many of the quote-unquote enemy they could kill. In order to impress the Poglavnik, that is, Pavlik, their Führer, and be promoted or singled out for heroism, the bands would pose with their victims before cameras. Captured photographs, they're too grisly to reproduce, show Ustashi beheading a Serb with an axe, driving a saw through the neck of another. By the way, I've seen these photographs in Avril Manhattan's books. They are indeed gruesome. And they carried a head through the streets in Zagreb. In all of them, the Ustashi are smiling and crowding themselves into the photograph as if to prove that they had a role in the atrocity. Some Ustashi collected the eyeballs of the Serbs that they had killed, sending them, when they had enough of them, to the Poglavnik for his inspection, or proudly displaying them and other organs in cafes in Zagreb. You talk about heinousness unsurpassed in the history of the world, what these Ustashi did to these Serbs. The point I would like to interject at this point is that Protestants, those who came out of the Roman Catholic Church, protested the Roman Catholic Church, and severed from the Roman Catholic Church, just like these Eastern Orthodox did in 1054, are hated even more by the Vatican than are these Eastern Orthodox. And one can only imagine, if given an opportunity and the power to do it, what Rome would do in this country. The veritable last bastion of Protestantism anywhere in the world. A Protestantism that has now become ecumenical. A Protestantism that has forgotten that the papacy is the Antichrist. A Protestantism that has essentially repudiated the Protestant Reformation and now seeks to ecumenically reunite with this Church of Rome. What would Rome do to the last holdouts of true Bible Protestantism in this country, seeing what they've already done to the Eastern Orthodox? That's for my listeners to contemplate, to pray about, to search the Scriptures. But the best advice anybody can give any of us is to get close to Christ. Read the Scriptures daily. Pray. Sanctify yourselves. I'll just say it plainly. There's a Protestant Holocaust coming to this country. At the first opportunity, now that ecumenism has run its course, the wheat and the chaff have been separated, I believe Rome now knows precisely who and when to go after. Now we'll continue where we left off Friday. It says, even the Nazis were eventually sickened by the atrocities of the Ustashi and intervened on occasion to rescue their victims, disbanding one Ustashi regiment in 1942 to prevent further atrocities. That's right. Hitler's Nazis were shocked and horrified by the gruesomeness and cruelty and sport of these Ustashi in their slaughter of the Eastern Orthodox, the Serbs. And it says some Italian troops hid Jews and Serbs from these Ustashi bands. Hefer, however, as governor general of a large area, was able to facilitate the continued killings. In spite of all of this, in spite of the Nazis trying to protect the Serbs, in spite of even Italian troops trying to protect Jews and Serbs from these godless slaughterers, they found a way to continue their work. There was absolutely no shame. Now, post-war escapes and misfortunes is the subtitle of the next portion of the chapter. He says, after the war, Archbishop Alois Stepinac was arrested by the Yugoslav government and sentenced to 17 years in prison for war crimes. The Vatican propaganda machine portrayed Stepinac as a brave victim of communist persecution, a portrayal which has continued in the secular media, including such magazines as Newsweek. Pope Pius XII elevated Stepinac to cardinal after the war. In Croatian communities around the world, Cardinal Stepinac associations were formed to lobby for the release of this suffering martyr, they called him. Such pressures succeeded in obtaining Stepinac's release from prison after only a few years. Andrea Artikovich, the admitted Ustashi Minister of Interior and later Minister of Justice under Antonin Pavlic, was in charge of the Croatian government's genocide policies, supervised its extermination camps, and in 1986 was described as, quote, probably the most important war criminal still alive and unpunished today, unquote. Nevertheless, having been mistakenly released by British intelligence in Austria in 1945, he entered the United States illegally under the name Alois Anich, and lived unmolested in Southern California until under his own name until his arrest for deportation hearing in 1984. Artukovich was defended by fellow Roman Catholics, such as Croatian priest Father Kuturic, quoted in a Chicago newspaper, quote, "And what are they trying to do to one of our real leaders, Andrija Artukovich, Croatian and Catholic, who is being defended by the real champions of freedom, justice, and truth against the godless Jews, Orthodox, communists, Protestants everywhere? They call our leader Andrija Artukovich a murderer. No, we Ustashi must keep our dignity," unquote. Finally, returned to Yugoslavia in 1985. Artukovich was tried and found guilty of numerous war crimes, including, quote, "ordering the killing of the entire population of the town of Virgin Most and its surrounding villages," unquote. Sentenced to death by firing squad, he died January 16, 1988, at the age of 88, before the sentence could be carried out. He died before they scheduled to kill him. To the end, his defenders portrayed Artukovich as the innocent victim of communist propaganda and persecution. Names such as Bosnia-Herzegovina and Sarajevo have become known to the world. The Serbs are properly castigated for their aggression and atrocities, yet news reports never mention the 1941 to 1943 massacres of Serbian citizens by the Catholic Ustashi, for which the Serbs are seeking revenge. A Reader's Digest article by a journalist authority on Yugoslavia mentions the Ustashi without a word about their slaughter of the Serbs. It refers to, quote, "Christian Croats and Serbs," unquote, and ignores the facts that the Croats are Catholics and the Serbs are Orthodox, and that a deep hatred exists between them. Just prior to this new war, inside Croatia, the Serbs had begun to fear another purge. Quote, "Ethnic Serbs, accounting for 12% of Croatia's 4.75 million people, accused the Nationalist Administration of resurrecting the spirit and policies of the Ustasha regime," unquote. The newspaper Slobodna Dalmatia was put under strict censorship in January of 1993 for claiming that, quote, "In the new state of Croatia, it is forbidden not to be Croatian," which means Catholic, unquote. We mourn with Archbishop Vinko Puljic the deliberate destruction of Catholic churches and slaughter of Catholics by the Serbs, which he publicized during a three-week tour of the United States in April of 1994. However, it is dishonest for him not to mention the Catholic Ustashi massacres of nearly 1 million Serbs. The sins on both sides must be admitted and repented of for there to be peace. The Vatican, which played a major role in the Ustashi's massacre of Serbs, and then smuggled most of the mass murderers to freedom, denies the blood on its hands and lectures the world on truth and morality. In his State of the World address for January of 1993, the Pope said, quote, that the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina has humiliated Europe and that the international community has a duty to, quote, disarm the aggressor, unquote, if other means fail, close quotes. Though he didn't mention Serbia directly, he implied that it was the aggressor to which he referred. Clearly, the Vatican's hypocrisy knows no bounds. In the last days of World War II, as Soviet troops closed in, Pavlich made his escape. Disguised as a Roman Catholic priest, Hitler's puppet ruler eluded both Soviet and Allied intelligence search teams and made his way to Rome, where he was hidden by the Vatican. There he met frequently with Pope Pius XII's assistant, Secretary of State Montini, who later became Pope Paul VI. Montini had known for years what the Ustashi were doing. As early as September of 1941, a Yugoslavian named Branko Bokan had turned over to Montini a huge file of evidence, including gruesome photos and eyewitness accounts which documented the Ustashi atrocities. The Vatican saw no reason to change its policy, but continued to back their man in Croatia and his Ustashi regime and its deeds. After Vatican officials had learned all that Pavlich could tell them about Soviet communism, Catholicism's archenemy, we're told, he was sent down its rat lines to Argentina. There, this sadist has mass murders surfaced once again. This time as security advisor to Juan Perón. Let me read this again. After Vatican officials had learned all that Pavlich could tell them about Soviet communism, Catholicism's archenemy, so we're told, he was sent down its rat lines to Argentina. There, this sadist and mass murderer surfaced once again, this time as security advisor to Juan Perón, the Catholic dictator who welcomed fugitive Catholic war criminals for Mother Church. Rome hustled out these Ustashi, as many of them as she could. She protected them, even with the help of the United States CIA and State Department. What do you suppose the Vatican has yet for these Ustashi to do in the West? Chapter 21, The Vatican Rat Lines, begins with a couple powerful quotes. This from a man by the name of John Moores Cabot, American ambassador to Belgrade. This is dated June 1947. This is an American ambassador to Belgrade. Listen to what he says. I gather that some arrangement has been worked out with the Vatican and Argentina, protecting not only Quislings, but also those guilty of terrible crimes committed in Yugoslavia. I presume we must protect our agents, even though it disgusts me. We are conniving with the Vatican and Argentina to get guilty people to haven in latter country, Argentina. Another quote, this one from the preface of the book Unholy Trinity, The Vatican, the Nazis, and Soviet Intelligence, a book that I highly recommend for my listeners. Here's the quote. The Vatican's rat lines were supposed to remain hidden forever. But beneath the sleepy town of Sweetland, Maryland, there are 20 underground vaults, each an acre in size, crammed with classified documents, hidden from public scrutiny. As the decades passed, the successors to the original custodians had no idea what awful secrets lay buried until piece by piece they lifted the veil of Vatican secrecy. By the time the intelligence chiefs read this book, it'll be too late. The Vatican's rat lines have passed from secrecy to history. It's an ugly legacy of spies, scandals, and Nazi smuggling, unquote. How did the Vatican get her criminal Ustashi and Nazi killers out of the way of justice? It says, within the collapse of German resistance at the end of World War II, the great fear of the people living in Eastern Europe was that the advancing Soviet troops would not liberate, but enslave them, whole countries would become part of the spoils of war, with which Roosevelt would reward Stalin. Freedom would be lost, and citizens once used to travel freely from country to country would become virtual prisoners of communist regimes behind closed borders. Escape from communist rule, if it was to occur, had to be effected immediately. With this realization, multitudes of refugees began streaming west ahead of the advancing Red Army. Mingling among those fleeing and hoping to hide their identity in the confusion were tens of thousands of war criminals from the Ukraine, Hungary, Romania, Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, and Germany. Ironically, many of them would receive faster and better aid than the legitimate refugees, some of whom they had imprisoned and tortured. Pope Pius XII's defenders insist that his wartime silence in the face of the Holocaust was dictated by the necessity for the Roman Catholic Church to remain neutral. As the war neared its end, however, the Pope was far from neutral. He pleaded with the Allied forces to go easy on both Mussolini and Hitler. Their countries had to remain strong as a buffer against Soviet communism. The Allies, of course, turned a deaf ear to the Pope's surprising intercession for mass murderers. Having failed to do anything on a significant scale to rescue the Jews, the Pope would exert great effort to save their murderers. The rationale was that the fascists who had fought communism must be rescued from prosecution as war criminals in order to carry on the battle from other Catholic countries. Though unable to rescue Hitler and Mussolini, the Pope let it be known in the refugee camps, quote, that the Vatican would shelter fascist fugitives, unquote. The Great Escape Westward. It is almost uncanny how quickly that word reached the quote-unquote right people, while remaining unknown to the rest. A steady stream of Nazi war criminals began to flow through an underground escape route which was quickly set up by the Vatican. The network would be known as the Rat Lines. Investigative reporters Mark Ahrens and John Loftus, having sifted through thousands of heretofore secret documents, write in their remarkable book, Unholy Trinity, quote, under the direction of Pope Pius XII, Vatican officials such as Monsignor Giovanni Montini, later to be known as Pope Pius VI, supervised one of the greatest obstructions of justice in modern history, facilitating the escape of tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals to the West, where they were supposed to be trained as freedom fighters, as well as Central Europe fascist war criminals from Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine, unquote. Most Catholics would have been shocked to know what the Vatican was secretly doing, and most of all to know that the escaping war criminals included a large number of Roman Catholic clergy, from priests to archbishops. Nor was the Vatican ignorant of their crimes, but had actually given them its blessing with full acknowledgement of the awful facts. How tragic that a similar effort had not been put forth to rescue the millions of Jews from the Nazi death machine. Unquote. Why did the Vatican not attempt to rescue the Jews? Because of its replacement theology. We'll be back right after this.
pledge allegiance to the King of Kings, and to his kingdom come, on earth as it is in heaven. One holy nation, and a heavenly Father, grace, mercy, justice for all.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately, and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines, 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the big Berkey. Now I save my back and hundreds of dollars, too. I was paying $600 for the same 3,000 gallons of water that a pair of black Berkey filters will provide from my own tap for only $99. This means that your Berkey water system will entirely pay for itself with only 1,500 gallons of use. And then you will still have 1,500 gallons left before you need to replace the filters. Do the math. Stop throwing your money away on bottled water and filter dispensers that may or may not be delivering as promised. For a limited time, First Amendment Radio is offering 10% off on the most popular Berkey water systems. Visit the shopping page at firstamendmentradio.com or call us at 559-781-3773 for more information. Leave your name and address and we'll send you this special offer. Do it now. First Amendment Radio is an authorized distributor of Berkey products.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Inquisition Update. You're listening to firstamendmentradio.com. Before I continue in the book, I want to remind the listeners that if you'd like to support Inquisition Update, which is a listener-supported program, please do so by supporting First Amendment Radio, who sponsors the program. If you'd like to contact me, please do so by email, tom@seawaves.us. That's tom@seawaves.us. Now, we'll continue. It says, most Catholics would have been shocked to know what the Vatican was secretly doing, and most of all to know that the escaping war criminals included a large number of Roman Catholic clergy, from priests to archbishops. Nor was the Vatican ignorant of their crimes, but had actually given them its blessing with full knowledge of the awful facts. How tragic that a similar effort had not been put forth to rescue millions of Jews from the Nazi death machine. I'll tell you why. Rome believed that the Roman Catholic Church, Catholics, those under the headship of the Pope, have replaced the Jews. That Jews are Christ killers, and that they deserve to be exterminated or converted to Roman Catholicism. Now, I'll leave it to my listeners to do their own research in the matter. But I believe, knowing what I know about futurism and what Rome's ultimate design is for Jerusalem, I believe that part of what motivated the slaughter of 6 million Jews under the Nazis was simply the fact that there were a good many Torah-reading Jews in Europe who were resisting any mention, any talk about migrating back to their ancient homeland in Israel. They were Torah-reading Jews. They knew that because of unbelief and apostasy that they were kicked out of their land, that God dispersed them from their land. And that if the Jews were ever to legitimately return to their land, first they had to be reconciled to God, and then they had to be redelivered to their land just like God delivered them from Egyptian bondage. And they simply were, well, they were restraining the Jews from demanding a homeland in ancient Israel. They were standing in the way of a program that the Vatican had in store. And that is to persecute the Jews, as it had done for 1,500 years prior to World War II, to persecute the Jews, to call out any of the Jews who would never return to Israel except by divine deliverance, and then, after having destroyed those Torah-reading Jews, use the remaining Jews and anybody else that could pass for a Jew to move to a homeland that the Vatican wanted for the remaining world Jews, to provide a stage with which to fulfill the phony 70th week of Daniel, to present to the world a phony Antichrist, and then to present the Pope as the vicar of Christ, the Messiah of the Jews. And I think we're right on the threshold of seeing all of this fulfilled. But I think the reason the Vatican and the world remain silent about the slaughter of these Jews is because they all are working together to foment the fulfillment of a phony refulfillment of Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27. And these Jews had to be silenced. These Jews who were not willing to go to Israel, that were trying to convince the rest of the Jews not to go to Israel, not to go back to quote-unquote Palestine. And they were right. And that's why they were silenced. They were standing in the way of a papal mandate supported by the kings of the earth, many of them calling themselves Christians, that don't understand the scripture, nor do they understand Daniel's prophecy. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24 through 27. I want to just say it as simply as I possibly can. The greatest Zionist on the planet is the Pope of Rome, the papacy. Because without a modern nation state of Israel, without Jews living in the land, without a temple on Temple Mount, without animal sacrifices and a 7-year peace treaty, the Vatican isn't going to be able to convince the world of anything. But the Vatican has designs for all of this, and he's been helped by the kings of the earth, including Nazi Germany, Stalin and Hitler and the United States. All of this working together provided what we have today, a new nation of Israel, and the stage is set to refill a prophecy that Jesus perfectly and completely fulfilled 2,000 years ago, making him the Messiah. It was that very prophecy that the Jews did not understand and therefore knew not the time of their visitation. And it's that very prophecy that is being confused by the Vatican today. So they will receive a false Christ, a false Messiah, the Pope of Rome. Preparations are being made for this now. The Pope's imminently to make a pilgrimage to Israel. Bibi Netanyahu's wife is just ecstatic that the Pope is coming to Israel. They've given him a sovereign enclave within the old city of Jerusalem. Balaam and Chamish have told us that in the early 90s, the Temple Mount deed was handed to the Pope of Rome. It's all in the works. It's all verifiable facts on the ground. And the world can't even understand what is happening because they don't have any idea that Daniel chapter 9, verse 27 plays a role at all. Because they too misinterpret the scripture. They failed to see the fulfillment of Daniel chapter 9, verse 27 in Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. The whole world is deceived. But that's why the world remained silent while the Jews were being slaughtered by the Nazis. They had to remain silent. They had to kill off those Jews who were preaching no return to Palestine. They first must be reconciled to God and then miraculously delivered. That was their minimum demand. But the Vatican wouldn't hear it. The Jews had to cooperate, and those who would not cooperate with the papacy's Zionist intent, the phony refulfillment of Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, could not occur without Jews living in the land. There had to be some Jews down there. And as long as these Torah-reading Jews were preaching, it was an error. It was leading to their own destruction to go back to their land without being first reconciled to God. They had to be silenced. I hope my listeners are comprehending what I'm saying. If you comprehend this, send me a note, an email. Tom@seawaves.us. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to know if this is making sense to you. I want to know how many of my listeners out there fully comprehend the 70th week of Daniel, verse 27 of Daniel chapter 9, was perfectly and completely fulfilled by Christ 2,000 years ago. Do you understand that the First World War and the Second World War were needed by the Vatican in order to refulfill that prophecy according to her intentions? I want to hear from you if you understand this. Now, continuing with the book, it says, thousands of the Ustashi retreated with the Nazi troops in face of the Russian advance and attempted to surrender to British forces at the Austrian border, but were refused. It was therefore necessary to get past the British lines secretly, and to do so they were aided by fellow Ustasha, Father Wilhelm Cecilia, a lieutenant colonel in the Ustashi military. He, quote, spoke with pride of his leading role in organizing 800 peasants to fight alongside Nazi invaders, unquote, of Yugoslavia. He had been part of Pavlich's entourage when the letter had been blessed by Pope Pius XII in Rome of May 17, 1941. In anticipation of the Nazi defeat, Cecilia had gone to Vienna in May of 1944, quote, to prepare the Austrian end of the escape network. We're talking about the rat lines here. He was to prepare the Austrian end of the rat lines and to found, quote, the Austrian branch of the Croatian Red Cross, which provided ideal cover for his illegal work, unquote. As for Pavlich himself, Western intelligence records indicate, quote, Anti-Pavlich clipped his recognizable bushy eyebrows, donned a beard, and with an Argentine passport slipped into Austria under the name of Ramirez. He hid in the convent of St. Gilgen until picked up by a British occupation force. By arrangement with the Vatican, he was released and surfaced 2 years later in Italy, dressed as a priest and secreted in another convent, until he sailed to Buenos Aires in 1948, unquote. That's how Anti-Pavlich got out of justice's way. Now he's going to talk about the early rat lines operation. One of the early key figures directing the escape of Nazi war criminals, and especially Roman Catholic clergy, was Bishop Alois Hudal, rector of a seminary for German priests in Rome, and a close associate of both Monsignor Giovanni Montini, later Pope Pius, or Pope Paul VI, and Alcide de Gasperi, another Italian premier. Confidant also of Eugenio Pacelli, both before and after he became Pope Pius XII, Hudal was a fanatical in his support of Hitler and Nazi policies, as he was in his hatred of anything communist. An unrepentant anti-Semite to his death, Hudal worked closely in Rome with the Holy Office, the successor of the Inquisition, watchdog over Catholic doctrine. Hudal saw no conflict between his beloved Roman Catholicism and his equally beloved Nazism. During the war, he proudly drove around Rome displaying a quote-unquote Greater Germany flag on his car, until an Allied victory was inevitable. Then it was hastily removed. Hudal's pro-Nazi speeches in Rome, his pro-Nazi book entitled The Foundations of National Socialism, given the imprimatur by Cardinal Theodor Innitzer, primate of the Austrian Catholic Church, who welcomed Hitler enthusiastically when he invaded Austria, far from being frowned upon by the Vatican, seemed rather to earn its approval. Close associate of the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Eugenio Maria Pacelli, who later became Pope Pius XII on March 2, 1939, Hudal was elevated to titular bishop in 1936 in a ceremony presided over by Cardinal Pacelli himself. Equally favored by the Nazis, Hudal held a golden Nazi party membership badge. So he was a high-ranking party official. Among the war criminals that Hudal helped escape were major figures such as Franz Stangl, commandant of the infamous extermination camp at Treblinka. He had presided over the efficient murder of about 900,000 inmates, mostly Jews. After his arranged escape from prison camp in Austria, Stangl made his way down the Vatican pipeline to Rome, along with tens of thousands of others. Hudal was the name they all whispered, and the password that opened secret sanctuaries. As Stangl told it, shortly after he arrived at the Vatican property in Rome, where he would be sheltered, Bishop Hudal, quote, came into the room where I was waiting, and he held out both his hands and said, "You must be Franz Stangl, I was expecting you," unquote. Stangl was finally located and recaptured in Brazil in 1967 by Simon Wiesenthal's Nazi hunters who learned of the rat lines. This underground network of Catholic offices, seminaries, monasteries, convents, now you know what all these institutions really represent. Okay? There are ways to harbor Rome's criminals. He says this underground network of Catholic offices, seminaries, monasteries, convents, and residences provided not only shelter on the escape route, but false identities and passage to South America and other safe havens. The most infamous mass murderer of them all, Adolf Eichmann, atheistic head of the SS Department of Jewish Affairs, and in charge directly under Hitler for the entire Holocaust, was among the tens of thousands who were carefully smuggled by Roman Catholic officials with Vatican blessing down the rat lines. Israeli intelligence eventually tracked down Eichmann in Argentina and kidnapped him. He was tried in Jerusalem and executed in 1962. The Israelis were careful to look upon this remarkable exploit, not as revenge, but as a triumph for truth and justice. Eichmann could have been murdered in Buenos Aires by Israeli agents. Instead, he was, at great risk and effort, brought to trial, where his victims could face him in open court, and the whole world could hear the evidence of the Holocaust. The quote-unquote wandering Jew, without a national home, whom Eichmann had systematically put to death by the millions, but now in their own land, heard the testimony. After hearing Eichmann's own admissions, though he justified obedience to his god Hitler, the jurist weighed the evidence, rendered the verdict, and hanged him. Most of the other Nazi war criminals, however, were able to melt into the German communities in Latin America. Having escaped the arm of human justice, they eventually faced a higher court, as we all must someday. There, perfect justice is meted out in spite of the corruption of those who claim to represent that court on earth, the papacy. An incredible obsession. The rat lines began with diplomatic pressure applied by Pope Pius XII to allow his personal representatives to visit prisoners of war camps to, quote, minister religiously to Catholics, unquote. The real purpose was to identify and smuggle out Nazi war criminals. It can hardly be a coincidence that the man Pope Pius XII chose to head this outrageous obstruction of international justice was his close advisor, Bishop Hudal, whom almost all of Rome knew was a fanatical anti-Semite and pro-Nazi. As Hudal himself later frankly admitted, quote, I thank God that he, God, allowed me to visit prisons and concentration camps and to help prisoners escape with false identity papers. I felt duty-bound after 1945 to devote my whole charitable work mainly to former national socialists, Nazis, and fascists, especially to so-called war criminals, unquote. What an admission. Do not forget that Hudal was a Roman Catholic bishop, close friend and confidant of more than one pope. He dedicated his life to serving Holy Mother Church in obedience to its spiritual leader, whom he believed to be the vicar of Christ. He would not have done anything that was contrary to the dictates of the one whom he called Holy Father. And he was rewarded with position and titles of that faithful service. Remember, the war had ended. Hitler's evil and its horrendous consequences in destroying cities and millions of lives lost was a matter of undisputed history. The massacre of 6 million Jews was fully documented public record. The criminality of the Hitler regime had so outraged the world that an international tribunal had been assembled in Nuremberg to try those responsible for war crimes. Yet Bishop Hudal, knowing the facts, declared with the conviction of a man who believes he has served God well that his quote-unquote charitable work had mainly consisted in rescuing war criminals from the justice the rest of the world wanted him to impose upon them. Did Hudal act alone? Indeed not. He faithfully carried out a secret mission in service to the Pope and his beloved Church. After he was replaced, that work continued under Vatican sponsorship. The new men in charge were even more overtly evil than Hudal. Like him, they were Roman Catholic clergy who believed they were serving God and knew they had the Pope's blessing. Thus, Hudal's incredible words about charitable work in rescuing war criminals are really the words of the Vatican that was behind the whole operation. All to the glory of God. Some of the most valuable assistance that Hudal received in setting up his infamous escape routes came from an old friend, Walter Rauf, himself a Nazi war criminal and mass murderer of the Jews. The tangled web of evil implicates other powers as well, with whom the Vatican covertly worked, including the United States. The OSS, the predecessor to the now CIA, borrowed Rauf from the Vatican long enough to debrief this former SS intelligence chief of everything he knew about communist agents operating in the West. Then they allowed him to return to his apartment in Milan, from which he ran the northern end of the Vatican rat lines. To help finance the Vatican's escape network, Rauf enlisted the former SS colleague, Federico Schwent, one of the most talented counterfeiters of all time. His genius supplemented Vatican funds during the early days of the rat line. Later operations were supported in large measure by the sale of some of the Nazi ill-gotten treasures, including hundreds of pounds of gold smuggled out of the West and laundered by Roman Catholic prelates. You ever wonder why the Vatican Bank is under so much suspicion and accusation for criminal money laundering? Nothing's changed. Rome commits the same atrocities today that she did during World War II, and all this exposure in these books that have come out about it, there are no hindrance at all to the Vatican. It says even the International Red Cross, especially the Rome office, but others as well, was duped into aiding the operation by providing the false identity papers that enabled multitudes of war criminals to board ships in Genoa for South America. That end of the operation was overseen by Croatian Archbishop Siri, who had such infamous monsters as Eichmann in a monastery during his flight from justice. As for Pavlich's old friend from the Intermarium and one of the mass killers of Serbs and Jews in Croatia, Stepan Heffer, the record indicates, and we've run out of time, we'll continue with this quote on tomorrow's broadcast. I hope this is sinking in. What Rome is capable of post-Vatican Council II. It's all starting to make sense to me. I hope it's making sense to my listeners. If you have any questions, email me.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines. 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the big Berkey. Now I save my